Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Wednesday, September 29th, 2021, 13 and a half minutes past the hour. And we're joined, continue to be joined by Pastor David Rush of the Fair Park Community Baptist Church here in Marion. And we had a very interesting conversation in hour number one, getting to know his background and thoughts on things. And this hour, we are going to dedicate and turn to a personal event in his life, dealing with the pandemic and COVID-19. But before we get into the questions on that, I know Pastor Rush has something he would like to say about his late wife, Debbie.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate that. This certainly has been an emotional roller coaster. My wife, honestly, has had illness for about 5 years. She started out with a lot of back problems, had major back surgery 3 years ago, and anyway, the back surgery led to several sepsis incidents and problems, and she spent months in the nursing home recovering from that. Every day I would go and spend with her, and she was just one of the most wonderful, loving people that you could ever know or meet. As I said earlier, she always had a smile on her face. She was always happy. She dealt with problems and adversity in her life very well. She was a woman of faith. Her family loved her dearly. She had friends all across the United States, in particular in Texas and Georgia, a couple that loved her. And my sister Ruth was just, she told me this was her best friend, and she'd lost her best friend. So this has been difficult. I had envisioned us taking trips together, doing some things, and things, you know, that I would have loved to have done with her. One of the things that I said to her as she was first put on the vent, and of course a person is sedated heavily, and as they try to bring them up out of that sedation, I spoke with her the whole time, but I told her, I said, hey, we have to take one more trip. We got to do one more trip, and tried to encourage her, and perhaps selfishly, but I wanted to spend that time with her. And as it became evident that wasn't going to happen, I told her, I said, you're going to take a trip without me. And I believe that's what she's done. Mm-hmm. She was a woman of faith. She loved the Lord Jesus Christ, honored him in her life, and she was the best friend I could have ever had.
And I appreciate you saying that. And just so people understand this, her passing has been fairly recent.
Yes. She passed on September the 16th.
So what is that now? 29 or 19 days ago.
Yes.
Yeah, so
yes.
Not too long ago at all. Yes. Let's start from the beginning. You had COVID back in December.
That's correct.
What did you expect? Kind of take us through what happened with you.
Sure. Well, I was actually helping with a someone who had a surgery. They came home from the hospital, and while in the hospital, unfortunately, and that's happened to several, anyway, was exposed to COVID, unaware of it, obviously. And this person had COVID, and in my trying to help and care for that person, I also was infected with COVID. So it's a disease that attacks you, and I had a high temperature. I was coughing a lot, difficulty breathing, and was really at the point where, in fact, my wife called the squad, thinking I needed to go to the hospital. determined I was going to try for one more day. But I was given the Clovial antibodies that was available. You had to be over 65 at the time to get that back in December, and then check off a bunch of other boxes. I ticked off every one of them because of other things that had happened, but in my life. But anyway, and that made a marked recovery for me. I felt much better in just a few days, but I felt myself getting much sicker, and I knew I was heading towards the hospital. I was pretty sure. So it's a disease that makes you. It's very difficult to breathe. As I said, I coughing a lot, and just that in itself, just the soreness in your chest is pretty oppressive.
For people who don't understand, because right now we are at the highest point we've really ever been in a two-week period in Marion County of COVID cases, so said the health commissioner yesterday on this show. What is that like, not being able to breathe, when you've breathed all your life?
Well, that's I tell you, it's a suffocating feeling, I guess is the best way to describe it. You try to take a breath, and you just feel like you can't expand your lungs, and that's really what's happening. You're not able to expand them enough, and then the lungs, as they fill with fluid and the mucus from the disease, doesn't allow the oxygen to penetrate the lungs as they should, and it's a suffocating feeling is to me the best way to describe it.
Now, at that time, back in December, because of the contagious nature of the illness, which we're all aware of, how did things go at that time with you and your wife?
Well, I had told Debbie, I said, look, I don't want you to get this. And I knew she had already had health issues that I was concerned about. So I said, just stay away from me. So I went back to our family room and kind of holed up there. There in the office I have at the house, we were already, services had been discontinued because of the COVID and pandemic, and so I was had started doing broadcasts online through Facebook. That was Christmas Sunday, and I was unable to speak that Sunday just because I was so ill. So I, but anyway, thankfully at that time Debbie didn't get it, and I was successful in quarantining myself enough. And once I was over it, I recovered pretty quickly. I didn't lose the sense of smell and taste during that time, as some did. But I certainly felt pretty sick.
Just to give the timeline of what was going on for people who are listening to this, December, the vaccine had not been offered to anybody as of yet. There was a mask mandate in Ohio at that point if you were inside anywhere other than your home. And that all, the vaccine started to be administered in January. By the time we got to March, April-ish, it was available to most anybody who was not a young child. Then in, I believe it was late May, the governor took away the mask mandates because the numbers were going so low, and everything seemed to be back to normal, as it were. We had Vax-a-Million, people, workers in grocery stores and department stores, the masks were gone. At this time, back then, how was church conducted at that point?
Well, when we first started back, we followed, which I believe was the right thing to do. We followed the governor's mandates. When we started church again, we sectioned off pews. Every other pew was available to sit in, and we had a sign on the door that said we would. You must wear a mask to come in, and everybody complied. A few, because of claustrophobic type problems, were unable to, and a couple, because of breathing issues, were unable to. But basically, everyone complied well, and so we followed the guidelines of the state, just hoping that would prevent any intrusion into the church of COVID, and that seemed to work. We had no problems at that time. I was happy when I was able to take down our little separations that we had in the church. I jokingly kidded with the church that we were going to have a mask burning party. Mm-hmm. And so things were looking better. We'd been told that there could be a resurgence, and unfortunately there has been, and the resurgence right now seems a little uglier than the first time around, as hard as it is to believe.
Were you and your wife vaccinated?
Yes, we both received vaccinations. She had the Johnson & Johnson. I had the Pfizer. I had to wait a little longer because of the cloviral antibodies that I received. I had to wait 90 days after that to make sure that the antibodies had... because they had an effectiveness against the COVID. So I did wait until, the proper time to be vaccinated.
After the 4th of July, when the numbers started to go up again, mm-hmm. and certainly by mid-August, when schools were having the big question, should we go back without masks? The state is not going to mandate this. The governor pleaded with people. He said, I can't mandate this because of the legislature. It's different than it was, but I really want you to take a look at this. Everything's on the increase. In August and July, when this is going on, what's the feeling at the church at that point?
Well, we had several who started wearing masks again, and some did not. I was of the persuasion that the vaccinations would be sufficient to protect people, and so I really didn't think it was going to be that large of a problem. Unfortunately, there is what is called the breakthroughs, and that's what my wife had. And whenever you'd like, I'll explain that a little bit.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, my wife had this very major back surgery. She was, like I said, a person who bore pain very well. Didn't complain. Didn't really mention hurting much to me. Most of the time, sitting in the same room, she would say very little. But she told me, she said, I've got a little pain in my back. Anyway, it turned out Debbie had a kidney stone that had blocked one of the ducts coming out of the kidney. And she was unaware of it because it was masked by her back problems. We finally took her to the hospital. Anyway, she spent 9 days in the hospital dealing with that. The stone was blasted, and a shunt was put in, and then she was sent home. She was septic while she was in the hospital, so she's had health issues that have been definitely a struggle. But anyway, we got her home, and things just never really seemed to improve for her. And anyway, she started getting to where I realized she was something was wrong, and one day she said, I'm having trouble breathing, and I called a squad and we took her to the hospital, and it was determined that she was she had COVID at that point in time.
Now, at that point, was there anybody in your life who was also dealing with COVID?
No, none that I was aware of. Yeah, so I don't know where she picked it up. We had went to a few stores, had done a few things. It could have been in the process of the hospital, you know, the incubation time seems to vary a little bit with this. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that I can tell you. And unfortunately, that's been one of the terrible things about this. You don't know. And I liken it a lot to a person exposed to natural gas. You know, there's a little odor there that has been placed in the gas to let you know it's a problem. You know, it's harmful to you. But with this, there's no smell, there's no indication. And so I'm not sure where she picked it up. I really don't know. But she was sick. I was not. I tested and tested fine. But things got worse very, very quickly. She was in a weakened condition, I felt, because of the problem, the previous health issue she'd had. And I do believe, I guess obviously, that people who are already dealing with health issues and then you are struck with a disease like COVID or other things, it becomes a much more deadly illness at that point in time.
When she was taken to the hospital and tested, at that point, what was the feeling of the people in the hospital?
Well, she was her breathing had become labored and difficult, and so she was placed on a BiPAP machine. The hospitals was becoming crowded with cases. They wanted to move her to the ICU unit, was unable to, and she stayed 25 hours in the ER. But was treated as a ICU patient in there, and from there she was transported down to Riverside Hospital and placed directly in ICU. They kept her on a BiPAP, which is a CPAP, but it inhales and exhales for you. That only lasted a day. She was undernourished, and they said we can't feed her this way, and you know, she just at the point where the oxygen intake was so critical, they said we really think she needs to go on the ventilator. And so one day after we got her to Riverside, she was placed on the ventilator.
This is a decision that many people are facing, and especially right now. What in your mind, and were you able to talk to her about this?
Yes, it was a rapid decision. On the BiPAP, it had to be set at such a high level that she couldn't talk. She was unable to communicate with me other than raising and lowering of her eyebrows, we kind of had yes and no's that we had worked out, and so that was kind of the language going into it. Part of her, I know, really was not wanting to do the ventilator. I've been on a ventilator because of a heart surgery I had, and knew the feeling of what it feels like to have it on. It's a very claustrophobic feeling, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And of course, you're unable to speak. You're unable to communicate much, but she knew that was what needed to be done. And of course, my prayers and my hopes was for her healing. We had people all across the United States that knew her and were praying, and churches that didn't even know her here in Marion and throughout the area were praying that she would be healed, that she would recover from this. And
when somebody's on a ventilator, what is it like when you're in the room with them?
Well, for the first few days, she was sedated. And in the sedation, and I was happy for her she was sedated. As I said, very claustrophobic feeling, very... one of the things they do, and I think that's a newer process, they put people on their stomachs so their lungs can fully expand. Normally when you're laying on your back, your lungs don't fully expand. So that's a new treatment that they're trying to do while they're on ventilators. So they turned her back on her back, and things started looking better. Her oxygen intake was good. They started weaning down the ventilator, and the day before things turned deadly. They tried to take her off the ventilator and had her off for 6 hours, but she just never. She was very weakened. She had developed what was called critical care syndrome, and it's just from being not immobilized for a period of time, she was unable to really do anything. I went in the day they had taken the ventilator off, and I was thankful that Riverside was allowing only me, but I could go in from 2 in the afternoon to 6 at night and stay with her. So I would go in and gown up and gloves on and the N95 mask, and so I was hoping, boy, today I'm going to get to talk to Debbie. And that never happened. She was struggling to breathe. Her lungs just didn't recover. The doctor said that the COVID was leaving the lungs, but I think the weakness of the illness had just overcome her, and so they put her. They come in and said, you know, we've got to put her back on the ventilator. And I said, I understand, and I think she needs it as much as I didn't want her to be on it. We gave her every opportunity we could, you know, medically speaking, to recover from this.
When did the moment come when hope started to leave?
Really, before even she was taken off the ventilator, I just saw a lot of signs of things that, to me, were not positive. Things that looked negative. One, she couldn't raise her arms or her legs. She had lost. She was totally weak, just her physically, she was exhausted. She was just exhausted, and some people can bounce back from that really quickly, and some can't. But I saw those things starting to happen, and quite frankly, the week that she passed, at the beginning of the week, I started to think about songs that we might use at her funeral because I felt we were headed that direction.
At what point did the doctors come in?
As far as...
And to say, this doesn't look good.
It was actually the day that she passed. There was hope. Riverside Hospital was excellent in their care and concern for Debbie. The resident doctor that was in with her the most in ICU truly cared, truly tried to help, and he just, you know, told me, he said, things are not looking good, and I watched as her oxygen level started going down, even on the ventilator. They couldn't, they turned it up to 100%, the maximum that the ventilator could run oxygen, push oxygen in, and her oxygenation rate just started dropping, and I knew at that point in time what was going to happen.
How do you make a decision like that to take somebody off the ventilator?
Well, we waited. We my hope and prayer, and part of that is, I know, selfish, I think, you know. I wanted her to stay with me. I wanted to live another day with her. Loved her with all my heart, and it was a difficult time. But they took her down to do a MRI, and possibly at that time anyway, they had the leg pumps on her to pump the oxygen back up from her legs, and unfortunately that's where blood clots form. But anyway, sometime during that point in time, she threw probably two clots, One for sure went to her lung, and her oxygen rate just plummeted at that point in time. But the other one, they're pretty sure went to the heart. They said she won't make it down to the heart cath lab if we try to take her down. And so as I watched her oxygen rate, as I watched her heart rate, it was obvious things were negative. Even in that, they come in and said, we can do the clot busting drug. Would you like to do that? And my two sons, Brian and Keith, were there. And anyway, my daughter was on the way. She lives over in Delphus, and so I had a pretty good drive to come. But we decided to give her the clot busting drug. But she'd already been on heparin, and the clot busting drug, it was too late, and the oxygen's level had went too low, and I watched her heart rate start to flatten out, and then it just became obvious from several other things that happened that this wasn't going to come to a positive outcome. And I finally turned to the doctor and nurse, and I said, turn off the clot busting drug. I think it's time. And so they called it comfort care. And we waited till my daughter arrived, and they took her off the vent. And she was so weak, her heart rate was almost a flat line, and she passed very quickly when the ventilator was taken off. It was very quickly.
For people who have not been in the room when somebody leaves us, how would you describe that experience?
Well, I know that Debbie was a Christian. I know Debbie is a Christian because she's still alive, just in a different place. Changed her location. But I was amazed at how peaceful she was. There wasn't any struggle. There wasn't even gasping for air. It just, she was exhausted, and it was time, and the Lord just took her home. She just passed.
Knowing that she had the vaccine, when you think back on this, and we hear about these breakthrough cases now, do you think I could have done something differently? This is a viral illness. You have to come in contact with somebody who has it to get it.
Well, looking back, and I think every human being has, what if I did this? What if I could have done this? What if? And looking back, there was no single point in time I could have, that I look at, that I can say it would have made a difference. I just, there was nothing that indicated things had gone in this direction. I know Debbie was weakened because of her previous stay and dealing with what she had dealt with, and she was already weakened from that. And I do believe, if you're more healthy, you have a better outcome. It doesn't work for everybody, but it does for most, that you can get through this. I know a few have said it's like a bad flu, but for some people, unfortunately, it's way more than just that.
When we know that we know now that she did have the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, did the hospital say anything? Because what we're mostly told is that yes, there can be breakthrough cases, mm-hmm. but 99% of those are better. You don't have the breathing issues. You just feel like you have the flu, and most of those people don't even need to stay in the hospital. Did they have a reasoning as to why this got so bad, even though she was vaccinated?
The doctor told me, said we're interested in Debbie's case because of the breakthrough, and that I was never told for sure it was the Delta variant, but they said that's the one that's going around now. So I'm sure there was some test laying somewhere that said it was or wasn't, but obviously it was COVID-19. But she, you know, they were interested in knowing how the outcome would be, because they had not dealt with that many yet, things had went this. I've unfortunately know several others who have had the vaccinations and did have breakthroughs. So as good as the vaccine may be, it doesn't solve all the problems of COVID, that's for sure.
Has this changed your outlook on where we are now in vaccines and masks as to what it was prior to this her passing?
Not much, because I approached things as cautiously as I could, and I did that for respect of all the people that I come in contact with. I certainly wanted to protect. I try to protect our flock and not injure them in any way. And so our church has always been a very, very friendly church, and we have always spent time at the beginning of our services greeting people and handshaking and maybe a little hugging going on, and we went to fist bumps and elbows and greetings and trying to be extremely cautious and then to just waving at each other just to try to. So I really have been cautious. I think what we do need to understand in all of this is that it's a real disease. It's not an imagined thing. It's something that's a disease that has to be dealt with. I don't think we have all the answers yet, Scott. I don't think the vaccinations are all the answer. I think part of it is there will have to be people developing immunities to it, and I think some of that will come naturally, perhaps as much as by the vaccines.
Being in charge of a flock, being the head of a church here in Marion, have there been issues in church with COVID-19?
Not in our church. We had several who have had COVID and have recovered from it. We have some still recovering from it. But there wasn't an outbreak ever in our church, and I'm thankful for that. But most people are trying to be cautious and be careful, I think, in their approaching other people, whether they wear a mask or don't wear a mask, I guess that's really the individual's decision. I have leaned towards the mask only because I want to make the other person I'm dealing with feel comfortable with me being there with them. And so that's been my reasoning for the mask. I'm not sure how much the mask helped. They may be a true solution. They may be a great gift that we have. But I think touching and other things that can be just as deadly, just as contagious, perhaps as the breathing. You know,
the big conversation right now, as they just came out, is the booster shot. Pfizer, I think, is the only one who's okayed that now. Would that be something after this that you feel is important to do?
I probably will take it when it becomes available. I have to wait a while because of when I took my original shots. I'm not opposed. I took the flu vaccination. I know some people won't take the flu vaccinations. I've taken it for years, and it's not made me sick or I don't think affected my health. And I think in some ways it's a good thing. So I don't have a problem with them. I think, again, people do have individual decisions they have to make. I've always tried to err to the side of caution. I've tried to use caution in what I've done in anything.
Right now, this county sits at 44% vaccinated, which is below the average in the country and below the average in the state. What do you make of that?
Well, I know a lot of people have a lot of varying views of the vaccinations themselves. I know there's been a lot of things said, passed around on the internet, passed, you know, to one another. Are there truths to any of those things? I don't know. I can't say. Perhaps a few things. Some of them certainly are incorrect, I'm convinced. But I know I heard an illustration the other day, and I thought it was not a bad illustration. In World War II, London was being bombed by the German forces, and so they were told they had to put blackout curtains in the windows to darken the community. And the blackout curtains wasn't really an option. You had to do it. And there would be people walking down the streets, making sure all the windows were closed and darkened. And the reason and purpose for that was is so when a plane came over, it didn't have a, oh, here's the city, here's where we want to bomb. And so it was done with that purpose in mind. And my only thought of that is that with vaccinations, it may not be the end all and solve all. It may cause additional problems, but I do think there is some benefit to it, and it's kind of like putting up the blackout curtains to try to protect. That's my thought.
When you go to church now or out in public, do you have a different perspective than you had before her passing?
A little. I watch people and watch their actions, I think in life in general, Scott, people become oblivious to things. I think we become quickly adjusted to things that happen in our lives, and we make assumptions that nothing bad will happen to me. And I think we go through life hoping that's the case, but it's not always the case.
Are you surprised by the resistance, strong resistance, that there is to the vaccination?
No, I'm not. I guess because I do believe we have that right to choose. And in making that decision, I think you have to do what's best for you. Unfortunately, I know some who haven't taken the vaccination who've been ill, very ill. Others who it was no more than a flu. And so, you know, that it's unfortunately, and I'm not a gambler, but it's kind of rolling the dice, I think, on whether or not how sick you're going to get from anything. Same reason I've taken the flu shot. It's not that I'm scared to die. I'm not. I've had two open heart surgeries, had a valve put in my heart, and had a quadruple bypass, and on top of that, I tore my aorta through a car accident. And anyway, heart disease was the main culprit. But I've had three occasions where I've come very close to dying, and so I understand. Death is a reality. Death comes to all of us. It's kind of like standing on the edge of the cliff and looking over it. You know, if I don't jump, I don't have to worry about this right now. If I jump, then certainly I know the outcome.
Do you think there's anything we can do at this point, anything you can do on Sundays or other days when people are at the church, to make this better until it's fixed?
Well, I have urged people, and again, I've left it at the level the state of Ohio is mandating at this point in time, or not mandating, but just you make the decision that you feel is best for you right now. You know, I felt protected with the vaccine, but so did Debbie. And so it's a risk that we take. we take a risk walking down the street and crossing at the crosswalk. You know, is that car going to not stop at the red light and hit me? I think there are a lot of things we can't control in life, and that's just a fact. But it's trying to do the things that will protect us and be good for our loved ones. It was very hard on my family to lose Debbie. And even though they know she's in heaven, even though I have no shadow of a doubt in my mind where she's at, that she's resting at this time. And honestly, if you would have seen her with the back issues she had, I did a lot of things to try to make her life better during this time. And I know those particular things are done now. I don't have to worry about that. But I didn't want to hurry that. And like I said, may have been a little selfish of me, but I wanted to keep her as long as I could.
We had a great conversation in hour number one on faith. And some people will say this was a good woman. She didn't want to leave us right now. She did what she thought was right. She got the vaccine. She, good mother, good wife. And yet, she dies from this. Did you ever question your faith at all through this?
Scott, I can honestly say I did not. I really believe, I quoted Romans 8:28 earlier, that all things work together for good. I personally wanted her to stay. Certainly I did. I loved her. Love her. And she was my soulmate, and so I miss her a bunch, and I will. There's a big hole in my heart. But in saying that, I got to that place where when I told the doctors, put her in comfort care, it's time. And that was momentary, as I said, for her. But I knew there was a place that we come to in life where life is just no longer livable, and she, as I said, passed so quickly. It was I was confident the right decision had been made. I knew there wasn't any question about her leaving. Knowing my faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, I believed with all my heart that it was just an instant from here to heaven. That Paul the Apostle said, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And that, to me, was the greatest comfort, to know that that the pain and suffering that she had endured, she lived with. We took a trip down to Florida and drove in my car. I'd bought her a mobility scooter, and we took it down to see friends in Georgia, and then drove on to Florida, and we had a great time together, but obviously, that created a lot of obstacles, some things you couldn't do, but I know she lived life to the fullest. And I knew, though it was she was too young, it was too sudden for the family, yet it was right for her.
Where do you go from here? It's been so recent. Where do you... We're going to go into the holidays. Life keeps going. This pandemic keeps going. I was told yesterday 21% of the people infected right now in Marion County are under 18. 21%. Never been that high. Where do you go from here? We know where society... We don't know where society is going to go, to be frank at this point. But where are you going to go after the loss of your wife to this horrible disease? Vaccinated, and seeing these numbers continue to go up?
Well, my hope and prayer is this ends. You know, Scott, through all of history, recorded history, there have been disease, there have been outbreaks of pandemic-type illnesses, and this isn't the first time that life has been faced. And it looks ugly. It looks very ugly. But having said that, I also believe that we have to go on. We keep going on. For me, it's day to day and sometimes moment to moment, quite frankly. But I've learned that staying busy and not moping, not dwelling on the heartache is worked best for me. I've always been a kind of a go doer and try to do something. And so, I really think that's what God wants us to do, to not be. I don't think living in fear is the right thing. And I think if we live in fear, we go into the hole in the side of the tree the squirrels live in, and life goes around us and goes by us. I don't think God wants us to do that.
Your wife Debbie, who we lost to this, who was here 30 days ago, how will you describe her to your grandkids and people who didn't get the chance to know her?
The most loving, caring person. I put in her obit. She was Nana to her grandchildren and great grandchildren. She was just a loving person who cared much. I was so fortunate to have her as my wife. So fortunate to have her in my life. And she will be described forever as the most loving person. I did mention it. We had so many pictures, and every one of her, just a beautiful smile on her face. It expressed her hope, her joys, her excitement. And she loved to be around her children, around her grandchildren. That was a thrill for her. In church, she was always a faithful pastor's wife. And I'm going to miss her. I'm going to miss her.
Absolutely. Pastor David Rush of the Fair Park Community Baptist Church. Pastor Rush, I can't thank you enough for coming in to share this very personal story so soon after it had happened. And I know I speak for a lot of the listeners right now in saying, we wish you the best. Our condolences to you. And if you ever need anything, let us know. And again, thank you, because I think people hearing this, it helps. It does help, because a lot of people are going through what you went through just a matter of weeks ago today. They're driving to hospitals, and that same situation's going on,
yes,
unfortunately. Thank you, Pastor.
You're welcome. Thank you, Scott.
I'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Good that Bob Dole is the only Republican past candidate for president who's shown at this event. Is that respectable on his behalf?
Well, that's the attempt of the anti-Trump people to downgrade him in some way. And I think...